trying to find all that stuff be very difficult.
Why was there so much gambling in Chinatown?
Because they had nothing else to do.
Who organized?
See, after work, you go back to Chinatown. You gamble, kill time. They gamble till 11, 12 o'clock. They close, go back to work the next day. But there are a lot of suckers that hung on, that lived on that. Lived on the guy who did the work, who did work and brought money into Chinatown. See? And that's how Chinatown prospered too. That kept the Chinese together because of the things they do when they get down there. Of course, I knew all about the gaming halls because I used to go down there.
Who owned
them? My mother used to go down and see Chinese ladies. And they'd take my brother Harry and I, or my sisters going to play with the Chinese girls on Chinatown. Well, I played Chinese boys. We used to go in these joints, watch them play Fan Tan, Em Gao, Pai Gao, Mahjong. We watched them play. They never kicked us out. They know we weren't stupid. We used to have a lot of fun going down there. You know, my mother let us go wherever we went, and the Chinese children were to some side of that. We were going to our, my go find our, going to our, they come around, the older Chinese. Besides, they knew who we were. They knew the wing, who belonged to Wing Sang, who belonged to Sam Key, who belonged to Kum Yao. They know it.
Who ran the gambling houses? Who owned them?
Syndicates. You know, four fathers get together, start a company, open a gaming joint.
Private business then?
Pardon?
It's like a private business.
Yeah, private. No white men in there, only Chinese can play. But the white man insists on giving Chinese trouble. Chinese themselves made the trouble. Jealousy, see? Tell the cops to raid them. Chinese tell the cops to raid Chinese.
Why? Jealousy?
So they kept it year in, year out, and it became an institution. Well, they let them run, but keep them under control by all raid them once a month or once every 2 months. It was and there was some kind of a secret understanding, you know. And when my dad gave up the Peace Corps, he was there for 45 years. I took over, see. Surprising, my father was born here. There's no Chinese school, no Chinese teachers or anything. And he had the guts to go and learn Chinese. I don't know how he learned it. He would read the newspapers like me, and he read Chinese books too. And he could talk any lingo.
Any lingo?
Yeah, any lingo. He never gets stuck in Chinatown. Only I had a little trouble because Mo Kong Sao Hao. I can't send him. Sound Yup, say Yup, Hoi Ping. 英才嚟，因為佢聲音嚟講啊 ，talk straight Cantonese. This is our teachers, Chinese teacher 講三話噶啦。佢冇講第二個另外，佢就講三話。咁我啱曬啦。They can talk like their own lingo. I talk San Hua. He understands me, I understand him. See? Then I got a, got a, don't go, got a, wow, say up, sum up, or ten at all. So I'm a user, eh? Him say, Gong, eh? Korean, I sang sing like a yellow.佢講會生話咯 ，he always talks his own lingo when they get together. See?
Tell me another thing. What did the depression do to Chinatown?
Well, it didn't affect Chinatown. A lot of them didn't have jobs. So the Chinese got together.We open our restaurants so those boys can come in and eat free. They're not going to starve. So we got jobs, we contribute. We get into an organization to have restaurants provide food for them. Oh, they go along swell. No Chinese had to starve. Because they didn't completely ostracize the Chinese. A lot of them gave them Chinese work. And those who got work contributed money. So some of his, the Chinese wouldn't starve, see? Wouldn't have to go begging or picking. No, they got along swell.There's one thing I say about the Chinese, they help themselves. Because some fellas eat out of slop cans, it's his head. Something wrong with his head. They even do it now sometimes. Oh, they used to send some good teachers over here from China. I'm in Guangzhou, Ottawa. And teachers, they know how to teach.Not because they know the language and know the reading, writing. You gotta know how to teach it. See? That's all my brothers and sisters, all in Chinese. Reading, writing. See? Of course, I can't do it now, I've forgotten them. Oh yeah, Chinatown, those days, nothing but Chinese. But now it's all 50%.
How did the, before the war, before World War II, how did the Chinese and the Japanese get along?
Oh, got along well. Oh yeah, Chinese used to patronize the Japanese restaurants.Japanese patronize Chinese restaurant, like to change the food. I used to do that all the time myself. I'd go to a group with a bunch of Chinese boys, come on, let's go to Jap Town. Eat Japanese food. Oh, we used to do that all the time.
What did you order in Japantown?
Well, we ordered, but I used to like the way they make the noodle. And then, But to eat, you want to eat expensive stuff like shrimps and seafoods, the oysters. It's quite costly. It's cheaper down Chinatown. That's why we want to eat noodles and some... chicken dishes. They make them nice too, very nice. We go down there and eat it. But we prefer Chinese restaurant because living far away from Chinatown, we didn't very often we eat it, except when we do home cooking. It's all Chinese. My father had a Chinese cook. It was too hard for my mother to cook for that gang of us, 12 kids, you know. And my mother and father, it was 12 altogether. So he always employed Chinese cook.
What did your brothers and sisters do?
Pardon?
What did your brothers and sisters do? What did they get jobs as? Did they go on? What became of them?
Oh, we difficult getting jobs. That's hard. And just after the war, then we get good jobs, not menial jobs. But at that time, they want to keep away from the Chinese. Let them go their way, we go our way, see?
Tell Pa that I didn't want to train to be a nurse. They turned her down, couldn't go to Vancouver General, try to take a training course. They turned Eileen down, your sister.
Oh, yes. My sister, Arlene, wanted to become a nurse. And she passed through high school. But they tried again and again. They wouldn't take her. Because she took a job like that. Not taking a job for the money you can make in it, because you don't make any money. Or damn little, anyhow. They give you enough to bear to wear by for your clothes, that's all. And my dad wanted to get her in. And tried all well-known white doctors. No dice. Two of my sisters wanted to get in. But they wouldn't let them join. But after that, they took up sonography. That was hard to get an office too, because the white lawyer says we're doing white people's business. Why should we hire Chinese? There's a reason, good reason, no better reason than that. Isn't that right? But in the last 20, 30 years, the Chinese are so progressive and they're such good workers. The Chinese go back to work, they don't fool around. Like white people, see, white people do fool around. The Chinese became very popular. All got good jobs, even secretaries to the top man, big law courts. In the law courts and in the private law, the law offices.
What about your brothers?
Pardon?
What about your brothers? What did they become?
Well, one of them gone in the bank, the Bank of Montreal. He stayed there until he retired just a few years ago. And I did the same thing. I joined the Bank of Montreal, but they couldn't take two brothers in one same office, you know, for afraid of, what do you call it?
Conflict.
That we might put two heads together and start singing. To prevent that, he sent me to Victoria.
Victoria.
They opened the Chinese branch here. That's when they wouldn't let me study law any longer, see? He said, come now, you're only wasting your time, and you're not going to get any worse. You better change your profession. My lawyer told me, if you fight them, first place, you got to have the money. Mm-hmm. You got to get good lawyers. If you succeed, there'll be 100 behind you who want to join up. So you better change your occupation. So I went into banking, you see. I worked in the branch here and for quite a few years and get to know how to run it. And then they started a Chinese branch in Victoria. They sent me over there.
Did you belong to any clubs or
pardon?
Did you belong to any clubs or organizations in Chinatown?
No. We had a Chinese student club at all. But we had, that was the time when we wanted to vote. We organized, we had about 1,000 Chinese in it. And we issued a booklet, you know, sending out the reason why we won it and everything. And we went to Victoria in a group, about 50 of us, went to Victoria when Parliament was sitting. We asked for a hearing. They did, they gave us a hearing. They appreciated it very much. Because they know damn well we were sooner or later we were going to get it. And they being in that particular party, there's a vote. I'll be darned. After we saw them, they changed the law, letting us vote. Of course, they knew sooner or later they got to give it to us because we're all born here. See, there's about 10,000 Chinese here, but they all didn't join the club. We just want the young people. That's all born here. See.
So this is after the war then.
Pardon?
This is after the war.
Yeah, after the war, a lot of the boys joined up, you know, went to the front. Now, there was another excuse. It gave us more power behind us, you see. Oh, yes.
Were there some...
The Chinese didn't have to go. They could have stood back and said, why should we join you? You won't give us a vote? But the Chinese got together and says, well, you boys want to vote some of these days and your children want to vote? Go and join up. You're lucky you won't get killed. See? Just a few got killed because after going in training, the war had been going on for about 2 years. You have to train these boys. After they finished training, the war was finished.
It's all over.
So none of those boys had to go to Europe to face bullets. But they did send them to Nam Yong, friends in New China. Places got to get training.
Mm-hmm. Did you belong to the Chinatown Lions?
Yes, I did, yes. Yeah.
Was that the first Chinatown Lions to be formed in North America?
Yeah, that's the first one ever formed.
Who started it?
Pardon?
Who started it?
George Wong started. George died about 6 months ago.
No, he died.
But he came from the East. Mm-hmm. He was connected with the a bank of Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. And he was he's already aligned there, see, when he came over here to work for the Bank of Nova Scotia, when they opened the new banks here, big banks. They wanted the Chinese business. They employed Chinese. See? But the Bank of Montreal was the first bank that employed Chinese. And that was my brother. Second was me. And that's why I didn't work permanently in that Chinatown branch. This Chinese Bank of Montreal is the second branch, you know. The second building, the biggest building in Chinatown. That's the Bank of Montreal. I mean, big as far as the number of tellers and everything. Although the commerce is big too. But they didn't have the facilities like the Bank of Nova Scotia.
Chinatown's really changed now.
It has since the new the Chinese from China came in more, bigger numbers.
What do you think of the way Chinatown is changing now?
Well, see, the whole thing is so something to do. The government made a mistake by sending too many at one time. What are they going to do with themselves? They can't get jobs. A lot of white people still don't employ Chinese. That's the result. They become vagabonds. Kill their own Chinese. They gave me a house, they killed 9 guys. They only hung one of them so far. The other one got away. But very few Chinese killed, very few. Unless they are in Seoul, that's between the Tongai, not with the individual. I think right now, Chinatown, they'll have to sit up and take notice and get organized to tell their own Chinese to behave themselves. Or the big gang wars like they used to have in New York. New York Chinatown used to have gang wars. Mm-hmm. Or they used to kill one another, kill them on the street, kill them in the association and everything. But when Americans gave the Chinese a free hand, that's what they turned into. But since Americans hang these fellows who shoot, who kill one another, and the rest of them put them in jail for life, requires they quit. You know how quiet New York Chinatown, you never hear about it once in a blue moon? Mm-hmm. Occasionally you do, though. But maybe small outfits have grievances, they fight it out. But they know they're arrested. The whole bunch of them get locked up. So, United States is pretty quiet, just like Vancouver. But these boys the young fellows start shooting, killing people, they're going to change the China. The Chinese don't change it themselves. The white man will change it for them. They'll get them and get them a, bring in that hanging law, you kill, life for life. They're trying to do that now. The Ottawa's trying to do that. Because they know they can't stop. When you see these young Chinese kids all got guns, how many they killed already? They have killed few, haven't they? Well, they'll kill more if they don't put a stop to it. Because the police have been leaving Chinatown alone for the last 10, 12 years, or 20 years for that matter. Then Chinese are gambling a small way. Police, as long as they never got in trouble, police let them gamble. I don't think maybe there's one joint in Chinatown.
Tell me.
I think there's one.
Is there such a thing as a Chinese-Canadian joke?
Pardon?
Is there such a thing as a Chinese-Canadian joke? A funny story?
Chinese-Canadian joke?
Yeah.
Well, we might know a few, but that we feel we know, but no, not generally speaking, no. Mm. Not generally speaking. I've never been laughed at yet. Because I handle my Chinese pretty good.
It's because when people think of history, they think it's all very dry and boring. But I think that in history there are also stories that are very funny. So I go around and I ask people, do you remember funny stories from the past? That's why I ask.
I don't know many of them.
Okay.
Well, I did know, I've forgotten them. Because the Chinese are so much forward now. You know, I don't mix with the coolies. I never did mix with them, except when my mother took me down Chinatown. But I mix with the people, the higher class of Chinese. I didn't mix with the coolie type.
What year were you born in?
Pardon?
What year were you born in?
1800s. End of the 19th century.
Well, you've been talking for about an hour. I think I better let you get some rest. About an hour.
Sorry, I don't mind. My throat is a little hard. What was that place at the head of Harrison Lake?
Well, he's born in...
it was at the head of Harrison Lake. There's where the Chinese, who were gold diggers, had to go and to get up into the Caribou gold fields. They had to go by Harrison Lake and Harrison River. And right at the head of the river, my father's father and mother, they opened a general store there. And that's how my father learned how to talk Chinook.
He's probably
talk Siwash, in other words.
He's probably the only Chinese who could do that.
Yeah. Oh, he used to, a few years back, my dad was in there 40 years, Chinese interpreter. occasionally he was an Indian interpreter, Doc Chanute. Because the paper blasted out, you know, but we never kept the copy, but otherwise I could show you.
How did the Chinese people treat the Indians?
Pardon?
How did the Chinese people treat the native Indians?
Oh, they don't treat them at all. They think they're trash.
Why?
No, the Chinese, you never gonna see the present day Indian. He's an Indian and he's not an Indian. Because all they think they do is to live off the government. Drink all the whiskey they can. No bed to sleep, lie in the street. Instead of them bettering themselves by